your turn to be afraid.
Are you a fan of things that go bump in the night? Chills up your spine, paralyzed by fright. Thrilled by horror at the center of a chat. Then welcome to the Nerds from the Crypt podcast.
Welcome back to Nerds from the Crypt, where we interview indie horror creators about their upcoming and ongoing horror projects. I hope you all have been keeping up with the podcast as of late and that you've been enjoying the episodes that we've been coming out with. Please let us know what you think about the content that we're putting out, and if you have anything that's coming up, or if you know anybody that would like to be on the podcast and would like to talk about those horror projects, just go ahead and reach out to us on social media. You can find us at NerdsFTC on Instagram, Threads, Facebook, and X. And you can also email us at nerdsftc@gmail.com. This week, Greg and I welcome back Kenrick Regan back to the podcast. We will be talking about his ongoing Kickstarter campaign for Supernatural Baby Detective, a funny name for this Lovecraftian comedy horror story. The story revolves Frank Solomon, a down on his luck PI in Jet City, as he is investigating a series of mysterious kidnappings. Listen to the episode so you can learn how Cthulhu and the baby come into play in this story. So we'll be going ahead and dropping into the interview, as we've already been talking to Kenrick about what he's been up to since the last time he was on the podcast.
My name's Kenrick. I have my own podcast called Spoil the Country. It's been around for a little while now. And I have a Kickstarter out. And we're doing a comic book called Supernatural Baby Detective, and it's been quite a lot of fun. So I'm out here trying to, you know, get the word out, get people to
hustle,
yeah, as they say, you know, shilling.
Shilling.
So yeah, it's been an experience, to say the least.
What have you, other than the comic book, what have you been up to in the podcast, I guess?
Well, I don't know if some of your audience might know us, because we still have a network that has quite a few different podcasts on it. And you guys are on for a while. I'll be honest, I'm not sure if you're still being hosted through us or not.
Yes, I hope so.
Oh, well, there you go.
Oh my gosh. Did we just get fired?
Is this somewhere we're getting told?
Turn in your badges, guys.
It's just that we've made so many changes to how we have people run, you know, host their show through us. And so now you go straight to our Caster, which is a company that hosts all our files, and submit your stuff just straight there, where instead of going to our website and doing all these things. And we made a lot of changes over the last year, simply to make it easier for the people who, you know, have their show, and two, for costs for us, because it became an exorbitant amount of money for us to maintain a website with the amount of traffic that we had. We got up to the point where we're getting about 130,000 people a month on our
that's a lot.
Yeah. And so when you have that much, your traffic tends to, you have to get a virtual server, you have to expand, contrast based on traffic needs. It becomes a whole thing. And so we didn't want to, disappear overnight, you know? So we made a lot of drastic changes to make it easy for you and for everybody else, which is just being able to go straight to Castos. I said Caster, but it's called Castos, and you're able to just upload your video. I'm a little tired, so I apologize if I'm a little slow. Just be able to upload your video or your audio and go. So it's easy for me, because we have like 20 different people on now on the network, and we just try to make it easy. And for us, for Spoiler Country specifically, the podcast, you know, we started in 2017, and we started slow. It was just Johnny and I just doing, you know, talking about comic books, talking about do you swear on your show? Is it a big deal? I don't know.
No, go ahead.
Okay. We just, you know, We just kept the shit real cheap.
bad word.
I know. And we started doing interviews, and it just kind of ratcheted up where it became where we were doing an interview almost every day. And literally within from 2017 to 2020, end of 2021, we had released over 800 episodes. And it's that's a ridiculous amount. And we just got really burnt out at the end of last year. So we just started to be like, okay, well, we're both kind of burnt out. We have a lot of stuff going on because we both have full-time jobs in the corporate world. So it was just time to, you know, take a step back. And that step back took a lot longer than we anticipated. So we both started working on other projects. I've been thinking about this project I'm working on now that we're going to talk about today for the last 2-3 years. And so I was like, you know, we're not doing the show right now. I'm going to write this. So I did. So I wrote it out and planned it out and got an artist, got everything going on and yeah. And so now we have our show coming back, but we're revamping it, kind of concentrating on more indie creators and being a little bit less. It's kind of funny. We used to put out a show, we get 5-10,000 listens pretty quick, and now we get, you know, 50. And so it's a whole new world, but it's...
Dude, so he gets 50 listens.
Yeah, dude. Beat this.
What do you get 50 listens in 50 episodes?
Yeah.
I got 50 devices, so I can get us those listens.
So yeah, we just, you know, now we're just trying to keep it more...
manageable?
Yeah, manageable and more fun. You know, it's weird when a hobby becomes a job, you know?
It's a jobby.
Yeah, and it just turned into not being fun anymore. So we you know, took a step back, revamped, and now we're back out here trying to do something different, and it's a lot more fun.
Well, I think we do that almost every once a month, so.
Yeah.
The thing is, you know, I think recording one episode a week is hard enough. I can't imagine recording that many episodes in the short amount of time, because just the whole going back and editing or going back and making sure everything sounds great and all that.
Yeah.
Just the editing part just takes twice as long as the episode itself takes to record. So
yeah, well, there's some tips and tricks you can do nowadays with AI. Well, not AI. It's Descript uses an AI engine to transcribe your stuff, and then what you're doing is just editing on a Word document, so you can go through and you can know, oh, I can take out all those uhs and ums, and you can do that like in 2 seconds, and then you can go in and say, okay, I want to. We talked from this point to this point about this. I want to take that out. You can just highlight it, just like a Word doc. Delete it. It's gone. And they do video. And so it did make that nice, because it took the editing down from 2-3 hours on an hour episode to 15 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let's take a look at that.
It's called Descript. I think they have, if you're only doing like one episode, if you do a podcast and you're out there and you're only doing like one episode a month, Descript is a great thing, because I believe it's free at that point.
We're going to have to ratchet down the amount of episodes coming out.
Well, I mean, yeah.
I can show you too. So if you ever want to, to see how we did it, I'd be more than happy to walk you through it.
Yeah, the problem comes from talking to creators who were on Kickstarter, right? Not necessarily that's an issue, but because they're on Kickstarter, I want to try to get it out as soon as possible.
Yeah,
and that's where the stress comes in. I'm like, oh man, am I gonna get it out before this Kickstarter even ends? Right. Sometimes, most of the time, I think we're able to do so within a week or so. But then there's other times where you've already talked to so many people, you have so many episodes already lined up, and then all of a sudden, hey, I have a Kickstarter is ending next week. Can you get me in?
Yeah, so we do video now. Like, everything's with video now. Mm-hmm. And that's the longest part. The audio portion takes me minutes to edit and be done. It's the video part, because I use Final Cut for my video editing. And that's the part that this is very riveting stuff for your audience members.
And they love to see it.
Yeah.
They love watching what you're talking about right now.
Yeah, they this love is amazing. Watching. We're talking great about audio. We're talking about video on an audio podcast.
Listeners, take note.
They'll but the video portion is what takes a while. And that's just because I want to do different effects, you know, or I want to put in this overlay here or do that kind of stuff. Other than that, the audio portion, we got that down to minutes. I can show you too anytime.
Yeah, well, that would definitely help a lot.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Riverside has a way to do that as well. I think just got to pay a little bit more for that option.
Yeah.
So do you think I could use this on Plates and Trains as well?
Only if it's Plates and Trains and People Monsters.
Plates, Trains, and People Monsters. I mean, it's definitely doable. Definitely doable. Oh my gosh. My world has just expanded by tenfold.
Well, we did ask Kendrick what he was up to, and it looks like you've had a little bit of a... took a little bit of a break from that podcast to do this new project we're going to be talking about today. The name of the project, as soon as I saw it, I'm like, hey, that sounds like, I think I know what it's about, but I want to go ahead and ask you. Supernatural Baby Detective.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. That name just kind of popped into my head during a podcast, of all things. I don't remember who I was talking to. It's been a while. It's been like 2 or 3 years. But I love the name, and it made me laugh. And I thought, well, I'll start when I started writing on it, I started thinking it'd be like, Look Who's Talking with like a supernatural twist.
That's exactly what I thought of.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just did not, that's not what came out. So, the best thing to think about is like, if you are a fan of Mike Mignola's Hellboy, or maybe John Constantine, and you read Hellblazer, or even Constantine, or maybe you like Guillermo del Toro's style of storytelling, there's a good chance that this will be up your alley. I use Cthulhu as a backdrop for the psychosis, and yeah, it kind of just stems from there. It's been a lot of fun. It's been kind of a journey because I've written a lot of short stories, and I've tried to start a prose and multiple prose. Why do they call it a prose? I don't know. For some reason, like, you know.
In order to get done with it, you have to be prose.
That's good one. Yeah. The answer I've heard yet. Like, legit, but
it's hard to do. It's hard to like sit there and like, oh man, okay, how long is it go? Is it is it this length? Is it this length? Am I done yet? I mean, there's a lot that goes into it, and you keep writing and writing and writing, and you're like, it never ends.
It never ends. I always get like life. Through a chapter to two chapters, and then I'm like, oh yeah, I'll go back to it, and then I never go back to it. And so I've had like all these started. Stories are these started novels and never finished. And then do you remember when Johnny a couple years ago did the Ainz anthology, a horror book, and he had all these people writing, and I was like, I want to write something, and it kind of got my juices flowing. Mm-hmm. And so I was going through, and he had all these stories, but it was around Christmas time when we were talking. I'm like, you don't have any holiday thing, you know, and Christmas for whatever reason is always steep in classic horror stories around Christmas time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So like you need a good holiday horror story. So I wrote the three page Nancy Ein's Krampus Killer. Mm-hmm. And so I told him, I said, hey man, I'm gonna write this Christmas story called Nancy Ein's Krampus Killer. And he was like, okay. But then I went and hired Scott Gadleski, who draws Superman and Batman and for DC, and he did Copperhead. I don't know if you ever read that series from Image. I absolutely fell in love with Copperhead, which was kind of like Firefly in a lot of ways, because it's like Western in space. And anyways, this guy he's an amazing artist, right?
So it had a very short run.
It did have a short run. You know, it's kind of funny. It
was like, I actually asked for more of that story. So,
oh, you did? Oh,
yeah, I did.
For which ones? For Nancy Ines?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. So I hired Scott, and I didn't give Johnny a chance to say no.
You have to not give that dude a chance to say no.
Yeah. So I was like, hey, dude. Here's my story. Oh, by the way, here's this, like, I paid a shit ton of money to have this professional artist draw it for me. Here you go. Done. And he was like, oh, I guess this is in my book now. Which was great. I was like, okay, cool. And so, but it got some good reviews from people who actually read it. And that makes me happy that you actually asked for more, because that means I was on the right track. And I just wanted something fun. That was, I only had 3 pages. He told me before I started, he was like, it can only be 3 pages. I'm like, okay.
3 pages, kid.
Yeah. Because I could expand that to a full 24, like, no problem.
Well, when I asked, I believe, I had to go back to the episode, but I believe he did promise that we're going to get more of it.
Oh, really?
So now you're on the hook.
There you go. I'll do more of that. That was a fun one. He wanted me to have Santa be an elf. Like an elf that works for Santa being the thing. And I'm like, no, it has to be. I needed it to be Santa, because it just was more fun that way. Because it's never Santa. So I was thinking, no, he's got to be in there. He's got to be the man in the chair. And so that actually helped getting me. I was like, oh, I can do this. And then I read Neil Gaiman's How to Write Comic Books, his masterclass, and he puts that on for free. Because that section,
yeah.
I was like, oh, are you literally telling me that I can just like grab some paper and draw out my boxes and then write my scenes to my boxes? And so I use PowerPoint like almost every day at work. So that's that's the tool I have. So I brought up my PowerPoint, started writing out changed my page sizes to modern comic book, started making my boxes, and then I just wrote my script within that, because I could kind of get a feeling. Mm-hmm. And there you go. Yeah.
So there you go, guys. If you know PowerPoint, you can script
you too. For
comics.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the way of the future.
It's the way of the future.
I mean, I write books in Excel, so, you know, hey, PowerPoint, Excel, marry them up.
I use Notepad.
Yeah, see? But you write on the toilet, so.
Well, it's just funny because when I got some advice and I sent it to some editors while I was still writing it out, and I sent it to them in PowerPoint, and they're like, "Is this fucking PowerPoint?"
In Comic Sans.
Yeah, and I'm like, yeah, because they're like, she's, and most of them are like, I've never seen this. This is like, but then one of them was like, I don't understand why I don't see this more. This makes it so easy. And I'm like, well, yeah, it has all my pages on the left, and I can do whatever layout I want. I just have to build my layout.
See, that's a selling point to me, so.
Yeah, it's easy. So I was like, yeah, there you go, boom. Instead of using, like, Scrivener and all these other things that are out there that are made for writing, you know, I'm forcing round pegs into square holes.
There you go. Do it. Smack them down.
Yeah.
That actually would be easier, though, than square pegs and round holes.
Yeah.
All right, well,
made in round.
Pegs and square holes? I don't know.
So let's talk about the people who are working on this. I think you have one weirdo in there.
I got this guy named Greg that is help editing and help managing and putting in the hours, Because Kickstarter is a, it's weird. When you see it and you hear about it, you're like, oh, that's kind of cool. But then when you're actually putting one together, and it's super stressful. There's a lot of tiny moving parts that no one tells you what's what or how to do things. Because it's not like there's a man. I guess there are people that have written out how to do this in manuals, but it's just you start reading and you're just. It's a daunting task.
Yeah.
You know,
need a guide.
You need a guide. Yeah.
Like a Sherpa.
Yeah.
not a book.
Yeah.
A Sherpa like in The Simpsons where they do all the work.
Yeah. Oh, wait. I wasn't trying to say that I was.
I would almost be willing. I actually have to think once this one's done, and I hope to God that I'm able to fund. Yeah. Which we're a third of the way there.
Yeah. In
3 days, we're a third of the way there, which is great.
Tremendous.
Yeah. I actually think about hiring somebody to do the second one, uh-huh. The second issue, because it's just so much work.
And once you've done it once, you can do it twice. You've already got the template down, dude.
Yeah. This is true. It can make home life very stressful because, you know, after your corporate gig and then family and then kid and then trying to keep and then juggling all that and then yeah. Kickstarter on top of all that, yeah. It can be stressful. So we have, Greg has helped me, navigate all of those waters because these waters are not still. They are choppy, choppy.
So are we going to see, Greg eat a chicken out of a can for the kicker?
No.
Is that on the table?
Oh my god, no. That was one of the worst things I've ever done. Just when you said it,
I did it to yourself.
Because we needed money for the Kickstarter. No, I don't know. I'm an idiot. I do stupid stuff sometimes. Greg eats dumb shit.
Yeah.
So
that sounds like a YouTube show waiting to happen. Greg eats dumb shit.
I've got a whole bunch of stuff lined up for the next week, but not it'll help you and Starlight, but the shop, but chicken from a can is so gross. No, I will not do that for this story. I think you're doing just fine. I don't need to.
So far, we're doing all right.
Not unless you're like, you know, at day 27 and
how much did you get out of that though? How many people signed up?
There was a lot of people that wanted to see it, and then as soon as I did it, there was a lot of people that felt bad that they watched it. dollar amount, I don't know. I can't
remember. Two Gregs in a cup.
It was
two Gregs and a chicken.
Yeah,
two Gregs and a chicken.
Get my own channel, only Gregs, only eating Greg. Weird stuff. People will pay.
I will routinely send Greg a memes with like weird food and say like, yep, there you go for your next Kickstarter.
Some stuff looks okay. Some stuff is like, I don't know.
Like the ranch style Pop-Tarts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dog is freaking out. So, Greg has been, but no, honestly, Greg, you've been a good guiding light, and I don't mean that in a funny way. I really honestly mean that because it's been, I don't think I would have got to this point without his help and his guidance because, if anybody out there thinking of doing this, doing a Kickstarter, just be prepared. It's a lot of work. Yeah. So
it's a team thing. You gotta build your team up and make sure that you got the support system. I mean, that's what I think when we started talking about this, a few months back, and you're like, I want to do this. And I was like, so who's your support system? Who's your check-in that's not directly involved on the project? And you're like, I don't have one. And I was like, I guess that's me now. Because you're sending me messages at all hours, which was fine. I mean, we're friends, so I don't care.
Well, I always figure I can be bad about that because I always figure, well, it's just texting.
Yeah.
You ignore it.
Yeah.
You know, but it's 2 o'clock in the morning, dude.
I mean, I get up at 3, so it's okay.
Well, here's what really gets me with Greg is I'll send Greg something at around 8 o'clock, right?
Yeah.
And I'm in Central Time, so I'm 2 hours ahead of y'all.
Yeah.
All of a sudden I get a reply at 2 o'clock in the morning. And then it's like 3 hours later, we're here recording. I'm like, what the heck are you doing, Greg?
Yeah.
Don't you sleep?
A robot.
I don't. I honestly don't. Like, yesterday was a blur. And then when they were like, oh, yeah, we're doing the wine walk, and then we're drinking, and then we're going to go do some karaoke afterwards. I was like, but I got a podcast at 6 in the morning. You don't got to work. And I'm like, I got to open the store afterwards.
Yeah. Sleeping in the back.
Six in the morning.
I honestly felt like, man, I didn't just like walk back across the street, opened up the store. I was like, if I just had an air mattress, I'd just sleep in the back of the store. But, you know, I had to come home, dogs, grandma, all that stuff. So, and this, I can't podcast out of the store. I've tried before. It sucks.
There you go. So, Greg.
Yes.
And then I have Ramza Sandoval, who's out of the Yucatan. And I found Ram on Facebook, of all places. I needed an artist. I'm going through. I can't hire, I can't hire someone from DC and Marvel every time I want to write a comic book. Yeah, because you hire somebody like Scott Godlewski, it's like $200 a page.
Holy moly.
Yeah. Cool. And so it was like, can't afford that. But and honestly, that style, that Marvel DC style just doesn't, I don't think would fit for the story very well.
Mm-mm.
I mean, I say that, but they probably would. But I don't think it would. And Ram, he's awesome. And his style is very much in the Mike Mignola vein, you know? It's not Mike Mignola. You're not going to confuse him with Mike Mignola, but very similar in the way that they present and the lines that they do, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt like I got really lucky, and I sent him the script, and he really wanted to be a part of it. He liked it, It's kind of weird when you go out there and you have a book, you have a project, and you're looking for an artist. That community is hungry, and so it can be a little daunting trying to pick somebody out because you feel like you're. I don't know how Greg, how you felt, because I know you've been in this situation where you're trying to find the right fit.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of times you have to say no over yes can be a little harrowing because, you don't want to disappoint and you don't want to hurt people. And you're basically giving them an opinion, which is just your own stuck up opinion about their work, and they're like, hey, look at this is what I can do for you. And look at all the stuff that I do. And they're out there really putting themselves out there. And then you're just kind of picking and choosing what you want. It always kind of weirds me out.
I think the worst part, I'm going to just say the worst part is like, if you do say yes and you find out that it doesn't, it's not a good fit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's really difficult to part ways sometimes.
Yeah.
Because then you've already been doing this, you built that relationship, the kinship, whatever.
Yeah.
And you're like, I want to say percentage wise, right? You're like 15 to 20% of whatever the project is complete. You're like, do we just keep going? 15-20%. It's really small, but at the same point, it's really large. It's a big investment for the two of you. Do you kill it? Do you stop it? Find somebody else, or do you just let it go?
I think you stop it.
Or do you just kill the whole thing?
Yeah, I think you need to stop it because you. The art might be, I mean, the person doing the lines and the pencil and the inking or the pencils might be fantastic, just not fitting your vision.
Well, that's what happened with what's his name? Mike Tanner, remember when they did that Ragnarok?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That one actually released with one artist. And then when they went to the second issue, they went with another artist and then they just like, we like this style more. And they actually went back and, on issue, I don't know if it was issue 2 or issue 3, but they went back and redrew the first issue because they felt like that one was more
stylistically,
yeah. So they went back and redid issue 1 so that it can match the rest of them.
Yeah. Well, I gave them a scene, and I asked a bunch of people, hey, if you can give me something similar to this so I can have an idea. Some people just gave me a bunch of their own stuff. Mm-hmm. I had a few people that just aren't ready. Mm-hmm. They're just not ready.
Yeah.
You know,
you get that.
Yeah.
You do get that.
Yeah, they don't know the background stuff or the different poses. I had one guy tell me that they were like one of the best duos out there, and then he sent me all their stuff, and I hate to say it like this way, but it literally seemed like a kid drew, like somebody who was in fifth grade that is a really good artist for fifth grade and has a lot of talent and is going to be great one day, but yeah. Just wasn't there, but they boasted themselves up so much. I had these high expectations, and it was like, oh, that's not what I was thinking at all.
My grandma says I'm a really good artist. Yeah. I'm surprised you turned me down.
So yeah, yeah.
So thanks for bringing me back into the fold on the other aspect.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this: if do you think it would have been a different thing if they hadn't tucked themselves up? Or do you think?
Yeah. Would it be a different thing if they haven't taught themselves up?
Yeah, so like if you received it, like, oh, this is a lot better than I expected.
You know what? Actually, I think if they didn't talk themselves up the way they did, they could probably actually get more work in different styles of genre, different genre and different formats, you know? Like if someone is going for a Teletubby look, they'd be great, you know? But going for like... I didn't tell people the name of the project because if you hear Supernatural Baby Detective, you're not going to think...
like Rugrats.
Yeah, you're going to think Rugrats. Exactly. You're not going to think Lovecraftian...
Boss Baby.
Noir-style horror. Yeah. Yeah, you're going to think Boss Baby. You're going to think Rugrats. Actually, Boss Baby would actually work for this.
Yeah.
The art style would work just fine. Rugrats would not, I don't think. But
Maybe.
But, you know, in my mind, it doesn't work. Yeah. So... You know, anyway, but Ram kind of just was just he just kept coming to the top. And the thing is that his communication was really good. And I'm a big person on communication. Like if you don't communicate and if you're somebody that takes 30 years to get in between communications, we're just not going to gel, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm not going to have a good time working with you. So I'm going to be like, nah, I got to move on and I'll take risks with people that are able to be upfront and thorough and communicate. And Ram is all that. He's willing to take risks and he'll talk about things and he can take direction. He doesn't get offended and overly sensitive about anything, which is good because I can tend to be blunt. So it worked out really, really well. And I love his art style. So
it's
been really good.
Yeah. It's nice. It's a good marriage.
I wanted to ask you about that. Did you already kind of have an idea of how you wanted our style to look, or is it something?
I really love Mike Mignola, Hellboy, and his art is fantastic, and his storytelling is fantastic. So I love that art style. It's different than what you see out of DC in Marvel, mm-hmm. even though he's done quite a bit for those companies. But it's still different enough that when you see something that he's done, you know it. You're like, oh, that's Mignola. It's like Ben Temple Smith, right? Oh, yeah. Another person that I love reading his work and his art style. So I wanted somebody that was could do some serious stuff, but at the same time have that edge of something different that you're like, oh, I recognize that's who that is. And so in my mind, I wanted somebody that I thought would that could fulfill that.
If I didn't misunderstand, the name kind of came up as a joke, or how did that come around? Because you said it kind of came up during the podcast. Now was that done as a bit or something?
No, it was weird. So I'm in the bag for supernatural stories, especially ones that are around detectives. So I love Constantine. I love Hellboy. There's a series of books called Sandman Slim by an author named Richard Kadrey. He was literally like my first or second interview that I ever did in my life for the podcast. And I read all the books and I loved it. And I just reached out to him and he's like, yeah, I'll come on. And we had this great conversation. And but I love that style of storytelling, that because it's very much like a noir style. When I was growing up, I loved The Big Sleep. I love Humphrey Bogart. I loved all those old classic movies. And we were on the podcast. I can't remember what we were talking about because it's been a while. It was 800 episodes ago. And yeah, like literally. And so we, old. Yeah, it's supernatural. So I just love that whole genre of stuff. And I was like, oh, detective. And I was like, supernatural detective. And then I was talking, it might have been Michael Tanner, actually, Greg, which is funny. And I said, supernatural baby detective. And it just made me laugh. And I was like, that's a dumbass title. But it stuck with me.
Yeah.
You know, it just, I kept saying it and it stuck with me. And then, yeah. And then I started outlining it and I had an idea. And then, yeah. And then when I sat down to write it,
it's like, look who's private investigating.
Yeah. Oh.
What's the title? Look who's fighting Cthulhu.
Third issue.
There you go. Look who's fighting Cthulhu.
Yeah. So it just kind of came out of there.
So you want to give us the elevator pitch of Supernatural Baby Detective?
Sure. Let me. Before I do that, can I tell you about the? Because I have two more people that I need to.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. When I started working on it, I sent Johnny Horsley, the guy. For people who don't know, he's actually my nephew. He's married to my niece.
And nepotism.
Yeah. Total nepotism. But we started Spoiler Country together, and then he did the Ainz anthology. So when I wrote this and he read the script, he kind of said, okay, I want to be a part of this. And I was like, okay. And I always worry. You always worry when you have friends and family start doing things because, you know, you want to be able to control with an iron fist, and then it's kind of that when you have sensitive but they're everything. But he was
dealing with Johnny, so I mean, can.
he was great, and he's colored, and it actually helped because he colored for free, which is huge. And the thing is, it always makes you nervous because when you have somebody like family doing something and they're like, oh, I just want to do it, I don't, you know, well, then you're like, okay, but. When I have a deadline, you're like, well, I'm doing it for free. So, you know, that attitude starts to be like, oh my God, am I going to have to deal with that? Didn't have to at all. He did the work and he did a fantastic job. He did. He's a good artist. He's good at the stuff that he tries to do. So that's always fun. And then, I have a mutual friend that knows Richard Starkings, and Richard Starkings is the letterist. He's an Eisner award-winning letterist. He was the guy that worked on The Killing Joke with Alan Moore. He's done a bunch of stuff with Alan Moore, actually. And he's done The Elephant Man and a bunch of stuff. And he read the script and said, hey, I totally want to letter your book for you. And when he said that, I was like, yes, please. And done. And that was a huge, for lack of a better term, a huge get, even though it just kind of fell in my lap. I don't know if you know, lettering can make or break a book. Definitely. In a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. If you can't read the book and understand the flow that's happening, and or if the letter placement and the balloon and thought placement is just off, it just ruins everything.
I mean, you could sit there and try to letter it all with you know, some program and put it all in there, but then your book just kind of looks like your first version.
Yeah, yeah. Just checking it out. Dude, are you kidding? No, that's so true.
I know.
I lettered the whole thing in PowerPoint using Word balloon envelopes out of PowerPoint. And then like typing it all out, and I like put in the chatter. I found a font called Chatterbox, which is the font they used in like 1950s crime magazine, because I was like, I want it to be noir as possible. And it works. I mean, it's there. You can read it, and it makes sense. But yeah, there's a big difference between what I did and what Richard Starkings does. Yeah,
it's giant. It's huge. When you put the two, I've done a side by side, and I'm like, I'm so glad that you had this opportunity to work with greatness because
it minimizes the need of a chicken.
Exactly. Yeah.
It was so
to
bad.
Sacrifice. Is that what you're talking about, Saul? We would have to. Yeah. We would really have to get that $3,000. We have like a couple.
Yeah, well, lettering is not my forte. That is for sure. But you know what's sad, Greg, is I've read books that looked a lot worse on the lettering than what I did in PowerPoint.
And they're professional books put out by major publishers. So yeah. I've seen some stuff.
I've seen it all.
And when you know what you're looking for, sometimes it's your eye can see it. It's not that like I just know certain things are what they are, you know, after having people point things out, like Tom Warnsowski has pointed out things and I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense as to why the lettering looks funny.
That's so funny. Yeah. So Supernatural Baby Detective is a 24-page noir-based Lovecraftian comedy horror. It's got twists and turns. You should be having a little bit of recoil on some things. You should be laughing, hopefully. at least I laugh through it. And wondering what's going to be happening next. You know, if you read Supernatural Detective series like Hellblazer or maybe Hellboy, and then maybe you like to wash it down with the viewing of Guillermo del Toro's Pan, this is right up your alley.
So,
what are you laughing at, Greg?
I was
waiting for Greg to say something.
I was going to say, as you scroll through, you can see you have a love for the holidays, and it shows in Supernatural Baby Detective. Because you go from your Christmas story to an Easter story.
Yeah.
You're a Christmas Easter guy.
There was a couple things I was going to do because I grew up super Roman Catholic. My family is.
Uh-huh.
I do not. I am not a. I'm agnostic. But I was going to do some things that were
symbolic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but I just kind of decided not to do it because if you're going to do symbolism, then I want the symbolism to be throughout and I want it to be consistent and for it to make sense.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to make that commitment.
it's a lot of Easter eggs and no pun intended because you have an Easter bunny in your book.
Yeah.
But it's a lot to do.
Yeah. That's kind of funny. You know what? I didn't notice that my last story was Christmas and then this one is Easter. I totally did not even notice that. That's hilarious.
The next issue would be Father's Day or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, actually, you know, it could be Father's Day or Mother's Day because you know what holiday doesn't get enough talk about and just not enough service? Arbor Day. I've been saying it for years. People need to talk about Arbor Day in which we plant trees. Yeah, save the trees. Save the baby. Save the world.
Save the baby, save the world. That's your whole thing. Arbor Day, save the trees, save the baby, save the world.
Yeah. Book 3, book 2.
Well, how about Groundhog Day? What's the name of that?
Groundhog Day.
Funksatani Phil.
Yeah, he's had enough of it, and he goes.
Yeah.
Baby versus groundhog.
Oh my gosh.
Baby versus groundhog.
That's which one would eat the other one? Be like a mecha, like a kaiju battle.
you wouldn't even have to just like have them fight over in a little playset. And that's your kaiju battle.
Love it.
Anyways, supernatural baby detective.
When you say the title, it makes me laugh.
So Greg kept saying Supernatural Baby Killers.
Yeah, Supernatural Baby Killers. I think that sounds awesome. Now I want to write a book just about Supernatural Baby Killers.
There you go. You should.
They're supernatural babies, but they're killers. Not that they're going after supernatural babies and they're killers.
One person's a supernatural and they're killing babies.
Yeah, that's weird. Although that's be an interesting book.
I mean,
I don't know. Lots
to go on. Knife to the head. Knife to the head.
Oh my.
So what is the what is issue one?
So issue one is actually called Stillborn, and
hell yeah. Dead on arrival.
Dead on arrival. Fuck! Why did I call it that?
I don't know.
So, issue one is you meet Frank Solomon, and he's a down on his luck kind of private eye that is struggling. He has an assistant named Pearl, who is like a daughter to him, and she kind of basically helps him keep the lights on and runs his. Runs the day-to-day. They're investigating a series of kidnappings that are happening. And through a book, Craig, I struggle with telling people this part because I don't know if going through it, one, I feel like it makes the book intriguing to actually read.
Yeah.
Kind of know what's going on.
But then it also tells them all the tea.
Yeah. It kind of spills out that tea quite a bit. But
just tell them. That he goes on a quick little detective jaunt, and then it goes sideways.
It does. It goes very much sideways, and we are set in a Lovecraftian style setting. And for people who don't know, that is H.P. Lovecraft, who was a writer back in the 20s and wrote a whole mythos around old gods of chaos and madness. And the priests of the old gods is an entity called Cthulhu, which is actually, I think that's the wrong pronunciation that everybody says.
Yeah, I don't think you can actually pronounce it.
Yeah.
You would have to, our vocal cords can't make the noises.
Cthulhu or something.
What? You said Cthulhu?
Something like that.
Whoa. Saul, what do we do with people like that?
End the episode. No.
Yeah. You guys get delete.
So I use Cthulhu as a backdrop. I want it to have the lore and some of the abilities to have that supernatural edge to it, and some of the creatures. Our main protagonists is a guy that's mad. And we gave him the moniker the Easter Bunny because he dresses up in an Easter Bunny outfit. And he's on the cover of the second of the variant cover. And, you know, I needed somebody that is like, oh, okay. But if you see that in real life, you'd be like, that's fucking creepy. You know? And that's a little much. And he's kidnapping kids. And Frank is investigating him. And things kind of go awry when Frank goes to his private island. And... yeah, and we see deep ones, which is creatures from the deep that are kind of minions of Cthulhu, mm-hmm. And it kind of goes from there. It's actually quite a bit of fun. I don't know, Saul, if you know any old Humphrey Bogarts, like The Big Sleep or The Maltese Falcon.
I can't say that I do.
Okay, that's like very much what noir is.
Yeah.
Right. So I really wanted to have that noir feel, especially for this first book, because in my mind Frank is somebody that is kind of out of place, out of time. He's in his late 50s, early 60s. It's the late 90s. Matter of fact, I believe it's 1997, 1998 when everything is happening, and he wants to feel like it's still the 1950s, the 1940s, and that he is, Humphrey Bogart. And that's how, when I wrote Frank, that's what I had in my mind, because I have met people in my life that are very much like that, that think that they're like, it's the 1940s and it's a male dominated world, and they still feel that way. So he's a little out of place. And so I wanted that first book to have that feeling. And because after this first book, things take a drastic turn. Very drastic.
It's bad, kids. It's bad news bears.
Yeah. And, God, man, it's Yeah, it's a lot of fun. If, matter of fact, Saul, if you want an advanced copy, let me know. I'll send you an advanced copy and you can read it.
Awesome. I think, is that the, wait, is that for issue one?
Yeah.
I think Greg already said it to me second. Look at it.
Nice.
Yeah.
I treated him.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. Yeah. I like people to read it because I feel like if you just see the title and then the cover A, I had commissioned from a guy out of Egypt named Aladdin Amayani.
Oh, I thought you were just setting up a joke.
No. I wish. No. But it's funny because I explained to him what the book was. And he was one of the artists that wanted to do the book in the first place, uh-huh. Right? But his style just didn't fit.
Gotcha.
It just doesn't. But I wanted some of the realism to be there, and that's what he does really well is some very realistic style stuff. And but he had never heard of Cthulhu. He didn't know what that was. He didn't know he didn't know anything about it. And so I sent him all this literature and pictures of it, and he was like, "Oh, okay." And I said, "Now I need him to be holding a baby, wearing a fedora." And he was like, "Okay," but he sent me, he knocked it out of the park.
That's actually a good cover. I'm looking at it right now.
Oh, nice. Yeah, mm-hmm. And so it kind of gives you it makes you laugh because it made me laugh because it's so outlandish, but at the same time, I've never seen somebody draw Cthulhu holding a baby. And then at the same time, it's like, okay, there's some shit going on in this book. And I feel like it kind of holds all the things. It kind of brings a lot of it together.
It makes it happen.
It makes it happen. Secret sauce.
Ooh. So I guess I can see what you're saying about the art style, because the art style, it's a really nice cover. And yeah, all, but it takes away from the style that you're looking for. I guess the for it to be the whole book.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't think if you went through the book, I don't think if you read the story that the art that particular art style, which is like again, it's fantastic, but I don't think if you read the book with that art style that it would have the impact would just be so different, and it'd be too much. I feel like. You know, it'd be like, well, this is not, I don't know. I think it would be too much to deal with.
Oh, yeah.
Senses.
I like the animated feel, I guess. The other art.
Yeah, Ram is very much, he loves Japanese anime. Mm-hmm. He loves kawaii. He's into wrestling. Like, he's a huge wrestling fan. He's just a big dork, and I love him. You know, I love him for it, and he really is. And he's got long hair, and he gives you like brooding eyes. So he's got, you know, he's just this handsome like Mexican dude that just loves comics and loves doing all this stuff, and he just fits into our little group. And yeah, it just really worked out where. And if you can see Ram's cover is our variant cover. And we do a variant cover because Ram really wanted to have an EC horror book feel to his cover. So he did like terror on the side, and he did different font for the Supernatural Baby Detective. And it fit, you know, different color scheme. And he did everything. Like cover A, the one that you're looking at, Saul, with from Aladdin, Johnny actually colored it. And he did a fantastic job coloring it because that green that he did Cthulhu and the red eyes and the texture and everything it turned out really, really well. But on the variant cover, Ram did everything, the colors, everything. And he was like, I'm trying to figure out what I want to do. And I said, and he goes, I want to do an EC style horror book and cover. And I was like, okay. I said, well, let's look a couple things and maybe you can get inspired. So I sent him the cover of Iron Maiden Killers, the album.
Mm-hmm.
And he loved it. He was like, this is, so he did an homage to Iron Maiden Killers using the Easter Bunny as Eddie. Yeah. And it looks cool.
Now, let's talk about the project itself. We as of right now, it has 26 days to go.
Yep.
Like we said earlier, it's about a third of the way, a little bit more than a third of the way funded. What can people expect to be able to pick up through the pledging?
Yeah, so we got a lot of different rewards. You can, of course, just do cover A, which is the Aladdin cover with Cthulhu holding the baby, or you can just do cover B, which is Ram's cover. We have Deep One pins, which I thought I was doing this unique thing that no one else is doing. Come to find out, everybody does pins because I'm an idiot. but they're cool. There's a lot of detail in them, which they turned out really, really, really well done. So we have pins. We have a Ron Randall exclusive print, which I was really, really happy with. So John is friends with Ron personally. They're personal friends, which is great. Mm-hmm. And John goes, "Hey, Ron, I think you might like this." Sent him the story. Ron read the book. He loved it. He was like, "Yep, this is awesome." And he did this amazing Deep One print with a Deep One drinking a goblet of blood out of a wine glass.
And it reminds me of what Greg was doing yesterday.
Yeah, pretty much.
That is actually a self-portrait of Greg.
It was me all along. Sorry, folks. I'm
a deep but one. The print is amazing looking, and he sent me the original. He did an actual watercolor, so he actually painted it, and it's freaking awesome. And he sent me the original. There's a part of me that was like, oh, I should put this on as a stretch goal for somebody, but then I was like, I just can't. It's going to end up getting framed and put on my wall.
Right.
And then a guy out of the Philippines did a noir style print that is like he got kind of an homage to all the 1940s movies, the movie posters for like The Big Sleep and the Maltese Falcon and other ones. I have and have not. And kind of did an homage to that. So it looks really cool with Frank and Pearl. And so we still have that. And then we have a lot of just different packages, a lot of different digital rewards. A lot of people sent me copies of their books. So we got Monster Manador number one, which is an awesome read. It really is, by Stephen Prince. We got a Pablo the Gorilla. We got the Ainz Anthology number one. These are all digital downloads that you get, and a plethora of others, quite a bit actually. So we also have the ability to get what we call the first 10. So cover A and cover B, we had a matching set, but those are gone. Those sold out the first day, which is great. We sold out the first day, where the first 10 copies that come off the printing press are being pulled, and a holographic special sticker that says first 10 is going to be affixed to the cover. And there's only 10 copies of cover A and 10 copies of cover B that's going to have that. And so we offered 5 individually on cover A, 5 individually on cover B. And then we did a matching set where you get cover A and cover B, and you'll get, you know, 1 of 10 on cover A and cover B, and 2 of 10, that kind of thing. And those sold out. Those are gone. But we still have the individuals. So if people want that, they can go there and get that. And then we also have like the everything. We have a goodie bag bundle, which has like a sealed bag with stickers and coasters and cover A and cover B physical prints within the bag, and all the prints and all the digital downloads. And so, yeah, there's a lot of different rewards that you can come in and still get. And we still have like a digital copy for $4. And then I think it's $10 for cover A and $15 for cover B.
And let's say once the Kickstarter is over, mm-hmm. Are they still going to be available, or is it once the campaign's over, that's it?
No, so the rewards won't be available, but the individual cover A and cover B will still be available, because everybody's been paid for their work, mm-hmm. which is great. So all we're collecting now is a little bit of recoup for my credit card because it's in a lot of pain right now. And then the printing costs. And that's really what we're getting the nitty gritty now is just the printing costs. And so once we get through that, I'm hoping to print about 1,000 copies of cover A and about 200 of cover B. Because cover B, I want it to be a little bit more exclusive. And
making a club, I see. Making a club.
Yep. And then we'll be, and then it'll be, hopefully we'll be at some cons, and then we'll have it available online to purchase and to order.
What is the expectation for the future of the series? Is it
so? It's a 4-issue limited run. So we issue 2 is already written. Once this Kickstarter ends and we get going, then issue 2 will start being built. You know, the art and the colors and the lettering and the editing and all that kind of stuff. Matter of fact, Greg, I need to send you issue 2. I don't know if I
sent it. Oh, yeah. No, you have not. So send it to me.
Yeah. And then,
oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Some issue 3 and 4, and there's some rewrites that need to happen on those. They're outlined. But I think because once you start writing out, so many things have changed. And so 3 and 4 need to be basically re-outlined a little bit and then written out. And then we'll see. After the 4 issues are done, we started an imprint called SV Spoilerverse Comics. So SV Comics.
Mm-hmm.
And we have 5 or 6 different projects already planned with outlines and stories getting ready to go. So this will be the first. This is actually the second series that's set because Johnny has Johnny Only that he's been working on, but this is the first one that we're really pushing, and we'll get through these 4, and then we'll see if there's a demand for more of Frank and Pearl and Alice, then we will definitely do more because it's a fun universe. It's really a lot of fun.
And you have to read to be able to figure out where the baby comes in to play.
Yeah. Yeah, but that becomes apparent at pretty quickly. So it's you'll be like, "Oh," and then you'll get it. You'll get the Look Who's Talking feel, but then you'll be like, "Oh, now I get why it's not Look Who's Talking at all." And then
the baby becomes apparent?
Yeah, becomes
what? How? That's immaculate. I don't get it.
You know what? I almost did is I almost. Actually, you know what?
What?
Next time.
Huh?
No, next time. When we talk about issue 2, I can give you the anecdote of.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Jesus Christ and Frank. That's all. I'll just put that hint out there.
They're the same guy.
Yeah, they're the same guy. But it's. Yeah. So 4 issues, and then we'll go from there. And hopefully, I just want to have a nice, tight, complete story for the thing. And then, in my mind, I want to leave it open to do more if we want.
4 issues, and then you're gonna collect them.
We'll do a trade paperback at the after 4.
Awesome.
So here's the deal. This is what I want to do. Mm. We're doing issue 1, and then Kickstarter. Then issue 2, Kickstarter, hopefully. Issue 1, Kickstarter, hopefully recoup some. I know I'm going to be in the red the whole time, right? Mm-hmm. So I know issue 1 will hopefully recoup some print, and that should give me the ability to pay to get issue 2 done. So I want to get everybody paid before I get into Kickstarter because I don't want anybody waiting on anything. And then issue 2 should do that for issue 3. Issue 3 should do that for issue 4. And then issue 4 should shore up any ongoing stuff that we're all done, and then the trade paperback would be like maybe make a few ducats, but probably not because there'll be a bunch of stuff I don't know that I'm supposed to do that I need to do. So
it could happen, man. I believe in you.
Yeah,
you're doing it right now.
And then we put it into a script and we sell the rights for a movie.
There you go. Movie or a series?
Both. I don't know. What would be better?
Both. You do a limited series, a short run series that turns into, or it's kicked off by a movie. So it's a movie.
All I know is I will not give up my rights for my characters, and then licensing deals would be like, okay, but I get points on the back on everything.
The Amazon series can be 9 episodes, and every episode is 1 month inside the womb. It's like a prequel.
Oh my.
It's the prequel.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Wild.
It's wild.
Wild. Anything else? Any other stories that I know you said, you kind of said that there might be about 4 or 5 that you guys are probably going to put together, but for yourself?
Yeah, I'm not somebody that doesn't give away some things. I mean, we're working on one. Yeah, we're working on one called Capone. Well, it's not called Capone, but it's around Capone. And so the idea is that Al Capone was not Al Capone like how we see him today. Al Capone was his mafia persona was a front. And what he was doing was hunting and killing demons the whole time.
Nice.
Do you remember? I don't know how old you are, Saul, but when I was a kid, I think I was 14, when Geraldo Rivera had Capone's vault, and he had this huge special. Do you remember this?
Yeah, nothing.
No?
Oh.
Yeah, there's nothing in there. Correct.
Yeah.
But it was hilarious because it was live on TV. It was like 3 hours of him, you know, cutting back and forth, and then the dejection on his face. And it just kind of it became a part of Americana, right?
Mm-hmm.
People use it as Capone's vault, you know? So we were thinking, what if that vault was housed a bunch of demons? And that was where Capone was actually kind of containing, like, Ghostbusters, right?
I was going to say that.
Yeah. Containing all these demons. And when Geraldo opens the vault, he released all these demons. And so the concept is there's going to be one demon that possesses a girl. And this girl is like 13, 14 years old. But for something for with her is not the same for the demon. So when the demon possesses her, her body, her mind, her is strong that she basically traps the demon inside of her. And she doesn't even know that she has this ability, right? It just comes out because of this. And so then she becomes the next demon hunter, using the demon inside of her to hunt down the demons that have escaped from Al Capone's vault. And so
I want to see this story.
Yeah. You're not inside. I'm not inside with you. You're inside with me.
Exactly. A Rorschach for you.
Yeah.
So the whole concept is, so the first book will be kind of a buildup, like half of it will be the buildup of what Al Capone's doing and getting to that point. And then this is what's in my mind right now. And then we'll write out the how everything's going. But by the end of the first book, or at least by the end of the first arc, then we'll be into the girl, and she will be the one fighting the demons, and Al Capone will be long dead. But it'll be a backdrop of everything that's going on and why. And I'm calling it, in my mind, I call it Capone's Vault. So I came up with the story. I outlined it for Johnny. At the beginning, I was going to have Johnny help me write this story here, the Supernatural Baby Detective. But I'm an asshole, man. I get very protective of what I'm doing.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, he read the first script that I wrote, and he's like, okay, I'm gonna make some changes. And I was like, I can't do it. So I took it back on the Al Capone vault. I outlined everything. I said, okay, now you write the first draft, and you get everything, and then we'll pare it down from there. Because then that way, I feel like I won't be this controlling freak.
So the book will come, if it's in Johnny's hands, it'll be like 10 years from now.
Yeah, it could be.
I'm just joking.
It could be.
Can we have a demon, kind of just like, you better pay your taxes?
That would be funny.
Oh yeah,
that would be funny.
Tax collecting demon.
Well, no, he's warning them. He's warning them to so they won't get caught.
Oh yeah, yeah. Pay your taxes.
Pay your taxes. So that's one, and then I have another one called that's a highbrow sci-fi, where it's deals with AI and humanity leaving the Earth due to the Earth is dead, and so we're searching for a new home, and all the humans are in pods as the AI is going, because it takes, you know, hundreds and if not millions of years to get through space. Mm-hmm. And so this AI is becoming the mother of humanity, making sure and looking for a new planet. But during the concept of everything that goes on, the AI keeps finding planets, but they're inhabited. And at some point it needs to make a decision. And so it decides to invade a planet that's inhabited by its earthlings, its, you know, its creatures. And, but inside the AI is very much like a matrix where the human race is going on about its business, living their life day to day, but they're plugged into this virtual reality to give, you know, because they, to give them the sense of home and not be stuck in this, space where the AI is taking care of everything. So inside the matrix, and I'm using the matrix so people have an understanding of the virtual reality that it's in. Inside that virtual reality, the AI plays a Earth invasion. And so the humans inside the machine, inside the spacecraft, it's been hundreds of thousands of years, and they have that first set that have set everything are long dead. Uh-huh. And the AI has, over time, the AI has instigated a factor of them not remembering them going into space. So they feel like they're just living their life still on Earth, even though they're in all these different spacecrafts searching for a new home. And so when the AI finds a habitable planet that could be for human life, decides, well, we need to clear the current inhabitants off of this. Right. And we're obviously the technological advanced enough to get there. So we're the ones that have all the power over this other world.
Genocide.
Yeah. And so inside the virtual reality, the AI does a whole thing where the aliens attack Earth and do an invasion. And so us as humans and say the AI think we're being attacked. And so then it creates the story of we're being attacked. Now we need to counterattack. Mm-hmm. And so so she starts to wake up, but now they think they're waking up in a time of war.
Yeah.
So they're ready to fight. And so we attack this other planet. And then when one of our people get caught, you know, get captured, and they start doing why are you attacking us, you know, after everything. And the pilot is like, you attacked us, you killed our planet. You blew up our planet. It's like, no. You're the invaders. And so the mind fuck starts from there.
Nice.
So we got a few things that are in the works. I'm constantly coming up with dumbass stories.
I like it.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah.
Keep doing it.
I want to see both of those. So next time you come on, I want to hear where you're at on those.
The next one is Capone. That's the one that we think. And then we have Rider of the West, which is about that one's going to be a little while because we need to find a Native American that's willing to work with us on writing, because we want to make sure that we represent that correctly. Because
the culture.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, because it's going to be during the Old West, mm-hmm. and it's going to be during a time of, and just making sure that we just hit the right notes and that we don't, you know, not two old white guys telling you what it's going to be. And and I loved, so I, you know, The NeverEnding Story came out in what, 1986, mm-hmm. 87, somewhere around there. So I was like 12, 13 when it came out. Loved that movie. I remember watching it. I remember crying when the horse dies in the swamp.
The depressed horse.
And I always wanted to be like, I want to do something with that horse, you know? So we made it where the horse dies, but it becomes like it's
magic.
And its soul is searching for Atreyu. And it's going through history and going through different universes and different worlds looking for Atreyu.
Oh wow.
And so when the horse comes to Earth and it finds this little this Native American girl who is like an amazing horse rider, and they bond, and the horse starts thinking this could be the soul of Atreyu. And then we have it to where the horse and her can dream talk. So when she's sleeping at night and he's in there, that they can start to talk with each other. But we don't know if the horse, you don't know if the horse for her, she doesn't know if the horse is good or evil or what. You know, she has no idea, because it's like, to her, it's like this demon thing that is communicating with her, and it's, you know, it's scary.
Yeah, yeah.
But we wanted to have it to where they're forced to be alone and they have to travel the landscape, and we're going to have it kind of like a kung fu, you know, where she's going from town to town and different things are happening, and her horse, things. And in my mind,
of course.
Yeah.
Her and her horse, of course.
And I want the horse to be Atreyu's horse, but there's a part of me is like, can we do that? I mean, I don't know if that, you know, we'll have to change it up and be, do something different.
Make it a Pegasus.
Yeah. But yeah. It'll be for me. Dang. It'll be Atreyu's horse. God damn it. That's called Riders of the West. Rider of the West.
I like it.
Yeah. And then Johnny has quite a few. Well, actually, that one, Johnny and I came up together on a podcast while we wrote the whole thing. We outlined the whole thing on the podcast.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's funny.
Remind me to go over my idea for a Nicolas Cage style story.
Does it involve bees?
Bees. Is it the one where he's on fire with bees? Like, so fire bees?
My pitch would be to have a story where all of Nicolas Cage's characters were real in some sort of like universe, like a multiverse kind of thing.
Yeah, I like it.
And then they're all like, all the characters are considered like iconic characters and all that, versus the characters that everyone hates.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Like the good ones are trying to stop them from making the bad characters. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I love it. That's genius.
That's like half of his movies versus his other half of his movies.
Oh my God. I bet he would make that if he needs
to. I know. That's the thing is, like, I feel like he would. Didn't he come out in a movie because his bodyguard or something like that, like, talked to him about it or something like that?
I don't know. I feel like he would be.
I think that was a movie that made it sound like that.
Big old comic book nerd.
Mm-hmm. He is.
It sounds like a really interesting concept for.
I'll trick him by saying it's Superman.
It's like being John Malkovich.
Yeah, yeah.
I never actually watched that one.
Oh, I used to watch it.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Or have you seen everything? I got it right here.
Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah, everything. Yeah, everything.
I have not seen that one.
I haven't watched it yet. I want to watch it.
It's you should watch it because elementally, it's not exactly what you're talking about.
You know, when I heard that it has Data from the Goonies, I was like, I am so watching it. And then I watched an interview with them, and it almost made me cry.
Oh, you watch the movie and you're like, oh man, it's really I was like, I'm glad I bought it.
Yeah,
you know, it's definitely something that
it's just enjoy. His journey. That guy's journey to get to that point was like, holy crap. I didn't know that he just kind of just like Goonies was like his high point. And then like nobody wanted to hire him after that, basically, because they just wanted him to be Data or Short Round.
Yeah. What's nuts is like, he really does in this movie, because it's very multiple characters doing multiple things from different universes. He shows a lot of range in it. So it's like, I mean, every character, everybody.
He deserved that Academy Award.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. I felt like I'm watching it and I'm like, he's definitely. And then just some of the things that he does in the main character, just like, how could you not want this guy as a friend?
Yeah.
He's just like, cause you watch him and you're like, how much of him is this real because of that? But yeah, I could see a Nicolas Cage movie where Nicolas Cage is fighting Nicolas Cage. I would die
for it. Just trying to hold back Face Off.
There you go.
No.
I know it's a huge success, but we can't do it.
Con Air versus Face Off.
Con Air. Even though
Con Air is one of the old,
I loved Con Air.
Yeah.
I know. Even though it's one of the bad ones, it's actually one of the ones I love.
Yeah.
It's so bad, it's good.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, Steve Buscemi, man.
A freak from Hackers in it.
Well, I guess I'm pretty sure I would have to change the character and the movies that are that, but it can always be like references to that. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if it'd be just the main character, or if it would be the whole world that's coming out and fighting. Like, you have Steve Buscemi as that psycho killer versus Don Travolta and his people.
Different elements from those different worlds popping.
Yeah,
up.
Yeah.
They're all fighting together.
Yeah. Oh, is there anything else that we want to just quickly talk about before
go to sbdcomic.com. And I'll send you right. Yeah, sbdcomic.com. I'll send you right to the Kickstarter.
Right
to. And make sure to give me all those links. I'll make sure to put it in the description. And like Kendrick said, hopefully we're still on the network so y'all can hear us in the same network.
Oh my god, we got fired.
We got fired earlier
in the podcast. We boosted his
he's gonna hang up and he's gonna be like, John, I might have let the cat out of the bag.
Yeah. It's actually made it easier now you don't have to worry about it. Nice thing is you don't pay for hosting at all.
Wow.
How nice is that?
Jeez. So what are we gonna do? Homeless.
Greg told me that you were quitting.
Never.
No, he hasn't let that cat out of the bag. No,
dude, Greg's on like 80 different podcasts.
No, that's why I tell him, like, you know, Greg's not here because he's doing other podcasts or something.
Now, like I said, now he's eating chicken for two because he's got.
There you go.
He's got to
start. He's got to feed me now. All right, guys.
Well, thank you, Saul. I really appreciate you having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Want to go ahead and thank you for coming on, and especially at 6:30 in the morning over there in your side of the country.
It's all good. It was easy. I was up at 5. I did. So I woke up at 5, and I was like, "Oh, what time is it?" I'm like, "Oh, it's 5." All right.
And Greg got his 5 minutes of sleep.
Yeah.
My alarm went off. I was like, "Oh my! I better feed the dogs and jump on this podcast, make a cup of coffee, and go."
Oh my!
Sleep. Who needs it? Overrated.
But okay, we'll go ahead and leave it there. We'll want to get you back next time for issue 2 and Capone's Vault or whatever ends up being called.
Yeah.
We'll be looking for those. And guys, like I said, go ahead and back the project. If for whatever reason you can't back it, go ahead and share the link, because that's the second best way to back a project is sharing it so that other people can see it, but also it spikes up the visibility, right, of the project.
Yeah, it helps the algorithm, that's for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Kendrick, for coming on, and we'll see you guys next time here on From the Crypt.
Bye-bye.
It's your turn to be afraid.
Are you a fan of things that go bump in the night? Chills up your spine, paralyzed by fright. Thrilled by horror at the center of a chat. Then welcome to the Nerds from the Crypt podcast.